Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your alternative talk radio contact, The Planet, KGRARadio.com.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Casey, did you want to start with your possible Bigfoot encounter, or would you rather talk, you went to Basin, you know, the whole Skinwalker thing? Totally up to you. And of course, first of all, thank you for getting in contact with me. And secondly, you know, have you been into this stuff your whole life? Like, what got you into this?
As far as like, I've been interested in it my whole life. It was primarily reading and, you know, TV documentaries, things like that. And in 2016, I actually had a life-changing injury and became disabled, and kind of had one of those moments of, you know, am I going to become a bitter old man, or am I going to learn how to live life? And I decided, you know, I'm going to live life. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to experience everything I can. And so that's when I kind of started getting out into, I guess you'd call it the field. I mean, boots on the ground, you know, going and seeing things that I've always wanted to, that I'd always read about and seen. And so I wanted to go do that. Yeah. And so it was just kind of a matter of circumstance, I guess, you know, life leading me where I am. But like I said, prior to that, it was, I mean, if there was a book on the Roswell incident, I read it. If there was a, I mean, anything UFO, anything strange. I love oddities. I love unexplainable things.
And what's cool about that is, though, there's a lot of armchair researchers, even though they might be in a really cool active area, which, hey, that's totally up to them. But you're actually getting out there and doing that. And now I don't, you know, in the beginning, I asked you specifically where you were, and I wasn't going to automatically put that in the recording, but whatever area you wanted to let people know that you're in, and you know, your primary research area. And I know that we're going to talk about the Uinta Basin, which,
of course,
as I said in the emails, John Olson has been on several times because that's kind of, you know, where that's where he is, and that's where he likes to write about. He collects stories from that area, and the stories run the gamut, right? I mean,
absolutely.
In Utah, it's everything.
It is everything, especially in the basin. It's my favorite place. I mean, it literally my favorite place to go, just spend an evening, spend a week at the hotel, you know, go camping, whatever. I love being out there. I mean, like you said, it runs the gamut. It's UFO. It's if it's paranormal, it's happening out there. And it can be terrifying, it can be fun, it can be relaxing, it's just an amazing place.
Now, do you have a kind of a paranormal team, or do you go out solo or with your family?
So my 10-year-old daughter is like my best friend. We are inseparable. We do everything together, and I could offer her a trip to Disneyland or a trip out by the ranch, and she would choose the basin every time.
That's awesome.
And she goes with me, like when I go, you know, we call it squatching, but I mean, really, it's a mountain drive. And You've been to Utah. 15 minutes from anywhere is the mountain. So you know, going in the mountains, it's always fun. We always do that together. She was with me on both my possible Sasquatch encounter. Again, I don't know what I saw. That's all I could think of. And on my best experience up in the basin, she was with me on both, as well as two other friends at each time. They were different friends each time. But so, yes, I do go out with others. Sometimes I go by myself. It just depends on when the mood strikes me and what the weather's like. I don't like to drive out to the basin when the wet, you know, I'm not going to go out there anymore this winter because it's a 2.5 hour drive for me through, you know, two mountain ranges, snow covered and ice covered roads.
Yeah, I would imagine it's not well-maintained roads in every area that you may like to go.
Exactly. And you know, safety first. I mean, as far as at least getting there, if something's going to, for lack of a better term, if something's going to get me, I would like it not to be an icy road.
Yeah. We can't all afford the, I just came across this, the Mercedes G63 Brabus 6x6 truck. Did you see that thing?
I
didn't know this thing existed. Like, if you take the normal, and I heard this on actually the Howard Stern show, they're talking about the G63 Brabus 6x6, and they're like, oh, well, compared to the normal G63, and I didn't even know what the heck that was, so I had to look that up. Yeah. Size-wise, you know, you have the Mercedes SUV, and then you have this Brabus 6x6. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen. That's, you know, if you're not talking about like an 18, like the cab of an 18-wheeler, but it's almost like $1 million. It's this crazy thing. But yeah, if we don't all have the 6x6, then we can't go out on roads like that. I never did get used to driving in the snow, so that wouldn't be my bag either.
So yeah, and so, you know, wintertime is a slow time for me. That's when I do more listening to the podcast and reading books and things like that. You know, looking at maps, seeing where I might just, it looks nice, like a nice area to go. And, you know, I don't always go just looking for odd things. Sometimes I just want to go to a nice isolated place and spend a weekend. And sometimes odd things happen during those weekends. I mean, you know, whatever.
Isn't it funny how that happens? It's when you're usually not looking that something strange happens, right?
It is.
So with your two possible Bigfoot encounters, was it the first situation where you're going out looking, or the second type where you just happened across maybe possibly these Bigfoot?
We were going out looking passively. We were going, me, my daughter Sophia, my friend Nate, and his wife, or soon to be wife at the time, Trish. We all decided it was late September, late August, early September of last year, 19. And so 9, 10 o'clock at night, we all just kind of decided, hey, let's go hit a mountain drive. And, you know, like I said, with the disability, hiking isn't a great option for me, but especially at night. So a lot of my stuff is like roadside. During the day, I'm a little more adventurous just because I can see where I'm putting my feet. And my balance is kind of shaky. So we decided to go up, Payson Canyon. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's about 15, 20 minutes south of where I live here in Orem. And, we drove up quite a ways and found a little dirt road to turn off on. And we're, you know, bouncing down the road. We get maybe a mile into this dirt road. You know, we're in pretty thick forest. You know, both sides of the road's covered with trees and rock and, you know, mountainside. And we run across some campers all kind of together. And we decide, you know, it's by this time it's, you know, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. We don't want to disturb them, so we decide to turn around and backtrack. And so we backtrack, not far, I would guess 1,000 yards maybe. And off to my left at about my 10 o'clock, I see eye shine. But the strange thing about the eye shine, at first it was piercing blue. I mean, piercing, like ice. And the headlights were not on it. So it wasn't, they were self-illuminated.
Oh, that's probably slightly shocking.
It was extremely shocking, and nobody else saw it at first. And I said, stop, I see something. And we stopped, and he shut the headlights off. And, you know, I see it, and it's I would guess that 70 yards. I mean, in the middle of the night, in dark, in the mountains, it was a guess. But I would say about 70 yards away, kind of up on a slope, not a steep slope, but above us. And it was just kind of standing there. And at that time, we all noticed four more sets of eyes at about the 11 o'clock point ahead of us, all at an estimated 5 to 6 feet off the ground from what we could tell in the dark.
And were those illuminated as well?
They were bright, like I said, ice blue. I mean, crystal. A blue reminds me of something you'd see in a CGI movie. I mean, just crystal blue.
Or like the the White Walkers from Game of Thrones had kind of eyes like that.
Yeah, just piercing. And none of them, there was no sense of like agitation or anger or fear or anything on my side, and nothing coming from any of these. And so while this is happening, I'm going through this internal checklist in my head. I mean, I know these mountains. I grew up in these mountains. You know, I'm thinking deer. Yeah, they don't. Their eyes light up when you shine something on them. I'm thinking cougars. They're pretty solitary. You know, they hunt alone. They don't pack up. Bears, again, very solitary unless it's a mom and her cubs. You know, moose don't light up like that without some sort of illumination. You know, something to make them reflect. And so as I'm going through this checklist, I notice the first one I saw is kind of moving to left more from that kind of 10 o'clock to 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock position, really slowly. And right then, Shannon, my daughter, at the time she's 9, she says, I need to pee. And I'm going, such bad timing. So I'm like, okay, here's what we'll do. Because, I mean, I want to watch these things, but, you know, I can't let my kid not use the bathroom. And I says, okay, you're gonna do your thing right next to the tire, and I'm gonna stand between you and, you know, this, so it'll be the truck, you and me. I mean, you know, and you hold my hand the whole time. So she gets out, does her thing, gets back in the car, and at this point, I'm keeping an eye on all the eyes, and I decide, now that she's back in the car, I decide to walk towards the four sets that were more towards about the 11 o'clock mark. And Nate gets out and walks up with me. And we walk up to a tree that's up in the air, up near the area. So, you know, we close the distance by maybe 15, 20 feet between the truck and those eyes. And I'm like, man, I kind of want to get a reaction out of whatever this is. And so I pick up a branch and I smack the tree. Nothing. They don't blink. They don't move. Nothing. Well, I shouldn't say nothing. They kind of swayed a little bit back and forth. But no advancement, no sense of aggression, nothing like that. And so, I'm thinking, I'm looking, me and Nader kind of just looking at it, just going, man, what is that? What are they? And I pick up a very small rock, I mean, a little larger than a pebble, really, and just kind of lob it in the general direction, not trying to hit him or anything. I don't want to hit an animal or hurt an animal. But I'm trying to elicit some reaction. And I lob it up, and one of the sets rises from double in height from where it was at. Went from an estimated 5 to 6 feet to at what I guessed to be about 10 feet high. And right at that moment, I realized I had lost track of the set that had been flanking our left. And I hear my daughter in the truck say, there's something up on the hill on the passenger side of on her side of the vehicle. And Trish, who was in the passenger side in the front seat, says, yes, I see it too. And we decide at that point, me and Nate get back in the truck and we drive away. And I asked Sophia, I said, what did you see? And she said it was a monkey or an ape. I don't remember the exact word she used, but something along those lines. And that was the only time I really felt any danger, because I was not right by my daughter when she saw it. I never saw it. And again, in the mountains, it's pitch dark. I couldn't see silhouettes, nothing. And we left. On the way out, Nate has a metal detector. He carries with him everywhere. He loves going metal detecting. On the way out, his metal detector starts just bleeding, just going nuts, screaming. And so we get a little ways down the road, and he pulls over to turn it off. And he goes, it's already off. There's no reason it should be doing this. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. But it happened. So, and then the rest of the ride home, it doesn't make a noise until we get right in front of my house and it starts doing it again. It was really weird.
Well, Casey, you know there was a UFO right above you. That's why it was going up.
I hope so.
We have to explain one mystery with another. That's what we have to do.
We have to.
Okay, so Trish, though, before I lose this, did she tell any more detail? She said it was a monkey or an ape. What other details did she tell you about what she saw?
That was what Sophia said. Trish just said she saw movement up on the outcrop.
Oh, Sophia saw it. Your daughter saw it. Yeah, so what else did she say it looked like?
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, she just said, I saw, and I can't remember which word, whether monkey or ape, but she said she saw what you or I would describe as a bipedal, a humanoid. And, I mean, here's the thing. At the time, like I said, this is about a year and a half ago now, I had just previously caught her in a lie. My daughter is very tenderhearted. And I caught her in the lie, and I call her out on the lie, and, I mean, tears in her eyes, screaming, I will never lie to you again, Dad. I promise. It broke her heart. So when she tells me stuff, I really do tend to believe her because, you know, she's a quick learner and she's wise beyond her years. And I've told her when we go out on these things, you don't make stuff up because, you know, I detest the things people say when that turn out not to be true.
Right.
And so she understands these rules that I kind of live by and that, you know, I hope for her to live by. I don't know what I saw. I just know I saw something that I can't explain with my knowledge of my own backyard, of the animals that are here, the wildlife. You know, I grew up in these mountains. I spent weeks in these mountains as a kid. You know, we'd go camping, and I've seen the wildlife. I know it. I know its sounds. I know its actions. And these, I couldn't explain.
Well, of course, several things stand out about the encounter. Of course, number one, the height. They go from 5 to 6 feet, and then one of them shoots up to 10 feet. So then the thought is it was either hunched over or crouching, which is terrifying to think of something that large being right there. The swaying, which we've heard before, them swaying back and forth, before. Which may be a depth perception thing as far as their vision goes. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Speculation. But the eyes, the literal, not eye shine, but eye illumination of these things is strange. It's not, of course, the first time that, you know, you listen to podcasts. I hear podcasts. I do podcasts, and I've heard many a times about this self illuminating aspect of these things' eyes, which is it can be a little nefarious because then you start to talk about the paranormal tied into Bigfoot, which people can get quite upset about and almost take personally for some reason, which I don't get. But hey, they get upset. That's fine. But I do find it interesting, though. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone specifically say piercing icy blue. It's usually like a red or an orange, you know, something like that.
That's what I had always heard as well. Right. The orange, the red, even green I had heard.
Right. Have you heard another person mention icy blue?
Off the top of my head, no. But, I mean, you know as well as I do, you know, people that are into this sort of thing and maybe listen to these podcasts or read these books, I've probably heard 1,000 stories easy I can't say for sure.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Just off the top of our heads, we can't think of them. So if we're going off the fact that these things seem to relish being in a family group, yes, they have sentinels, and sometimes you'll see the alpha by himself, or people see a mother and a child. So all those things were together, obviously, at this point. We can speculate it's a family or just a group of large dudes hanging out, whatever it was. But all of them had this piercing, icy blue eye, quote-unquote, shine. That is so strange. What do you make of that, though?
What do I think of
it? Yeah, the eye shine specifically, or the eye illumination, I should say.
Yeah, the kid in me got the best of me that night. I was intrigued. At that point, I wanted to see something. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to go from believing to knowing. That's the way I always say it. You know, people say, "Do you believe in Sasquatch?" I say, "I believe in a lot of things. Do I know? I don't." What I think of the blue eye shine was just it intrigued me. It was, I wouldn't say it was hypnotic or trance-like, but I just became, my curiosity just peaked. I had to look at it. I wanted to see whatever was causing it, because I'd never seen anything like that before. You know, I think there's two kinds of people in the world who, when they see something they've never seen before, they either run from it or they run to it. And I've always been the type to move towards the unknown, or, you know, whatever's intriguing me. And that's what it was. I just became intrigued.
I can see why. Definitely. I mean, if your daughter wasn't there, and then maybe, you know, if Nate was on the phone, he might say, yeah, if Trish wasn't there, you know, if the girls weren't there, because, you know, you guys are usually like protective of, you know, of kids and ladies and all of that. It's the way of the world. If the girls weren't there, how different do you think it would have been? Do you think you would have, like, grabbed a flashlight and, you know, tried to walk up the hill? I mean, have you thought about that?
We did have flashlights, but they were of very, very poor quality. Strangely enough, our spotlight that we always take out had malfunctioned on the way up.
Which goes along with the metal detector malfunctioning on the way down.
Possibly, yeah. It was strange. If it had just been Nate and I, or if it had just been me myself, complete speculation. You know, it didn't happen that way, but I like to think that I would have hung out a little longer. I mean, you know, I don't think I wanted to walk up to whatever it was. I mean, toe to toe, but I certainly wasn't in the mood to leave yet. And Sophia was. She was ready to, you know, what her and I always say is GTFO.
Yeah, it was time. Whatever it was, too close. But you must have heard something in her voice, right? And you're like, okay, time to go.
I did. Yeah. And, you know, once you hear that fear in your daughter's voice, or your girlfriend or wife, you know, your significant other.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to pull back from where you're at and do it a little differently. Now, I mean, I've been on plenty of drives where I was by myself and, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I did exactly what I say I'll never do, is I put the pedal down. You know, it's scary to be out there alone. But then there's been other times when the exact same things happened and I've sat there. I used to go buy breakfast early in the morning, go grab some biscuits and gravy, go up to one of my favorite spots and just pull off into a meadow and sit. And there's been many times I've been doing that and, you know, had the hairs on the back of my neck go up, and I just sit there and wait and watch. Okay, maybe it's a bear, maybe it's a cat, maybe it's nothing. Maybe my mind's scaring myself. And for me at least, what I've experienced, every situation is unique. And for me, that was the only time I've ever really seen anything, and so it really stands out as unique, because I would love to speculate and say, oh, I would have stayed there, because I wasn't at the time scared. I did not feel any sense of fear.
No sounds or smells?
Nope, no sounds, no smells. The only, and the next part, I mean, there's a little bit more. So the next day, Nate had gone to work. Sophia had gone back with her mother. And so Trisha and I drove up there during the day to kind of get a really good lay of the land and where we were at. We went up and actually hiked up to where we saw it and took some just eyeball measurements with a tape measure. She stood down where the truck was, and I went up to where it was at. And we kind of got a pretty good eyesight estimate of no less than 8.5 feet tall is where those eyes rose to. And then we hiked up and over the ridge you know, again, this is here in Utah, it's what we'd call a rolling hill in the mountains. It wasn't a big, you know, steep hike or anything, but we hiked up over the ridge and actually saw some a bear footprint, not a bear, B-E-A-R, B-A-R-E,
right,
a bear footprint. I don't remember the measurement. She has a picture of it. I'll have to get her to send it to me, and I will email it to you. But we did take a picture of it. So that was interesting as well, because I wouldn't be walking around barefoot out in those woods. I mean, there's snakes, and I hate snakes. But
no, it's not a comfortable feeling.
No.
I mean, was it a large bear footprint?
Yeah, I want to say, I mean, it was bigger than my foot. I wear a 10, so I want to say it wasn't way bigger than mine, but it was bigger than mine. I would guess it maybe at a size 13 shoe or boot. So it wasn't extraordinarily large, but it was bare. It was a footprint with defined toes and heel. It wasn't deep enough to cast because this was really hard packed soil. But it was there.
With it being hard packed soil, though, it was probably a little surprising to find that if you were trying to, you know, really step on that ground, depending on when the footprint was made, of course, if it was soggy wet, it'd be easier. But yeah. I don't know exactly what the substrate is in the location you're talking about. But for the most part, were you kind of like, oh, this was a big whatever it was, like heavy?
Oh, it was heavy, whatever it was. I mean, it was either really heavy or it was a really old footprint that had been wettened and dried, mm-hmm. And you know, weathered.
Right.
But by the looks of it, it didn't look like that. It didn't have, you know, cracks and like you'd see in the desert of a really weathered, you know, desert floor. It looked more recent. I'm trying to think, again, this is a year and a half ago, I'm trying to think of the foliage around it. I don't recall any being bent over under it. But again, I'm going to have her send me that picture, and I will definitely email it.
That would be awesome to see that, yeah. And I'm sure folks would love that. When I mentioned photos, everyone's like, well, where is it? I want to see it. And I'm like, go to the show notes. I promise it'll be there. That is so cool that you guys went back. That's what I was going to say. Huge high five to do that. You did the measurements. You found the footprint. So the footprint, obviously, was not made that night before. But it may have been made by the same group or an individual that was part of that group, obviously, at some time.
Could have been.
The other fact about the story is what they were doing there in the first place. And, of course, you mentioned the fact that the whole reason you even turned back around and were headed back down, mm-hmm. was because of the fact that you found all those campers. Is that a camping spot? Or a bunch of people had just gone, this looks like a good place, let's set up here.
It kind of opens up into a meadow. So yeah, it's kind of like, it's not like a designated camping spot, but it's like, it makes a heck of a camping spot because of the way the road opens up into a meadow right there. It's not, like I said, not designated as a camping spot, but I'm sure it's used often that way.
Yeah. So they were probably just really there to see what the heck these folks were doing up the road, right?
If they were in fact Sasquatch, and I mean, that's the best I can come up with right now still, is, yeah, they were probably just checking out the, you know, why are these people in my backyard? Because here in Utah, you know, up in Washington, Oregon, California, we share backyards with wildlife, you know, Montana, all these western states, northwestern states, their backyard is our backyard, and we're going to come across each other from time to time. And I personally, I think they're just as curious as we are and probably a bit more territorial than we are.
Yeah, I would imagine they'd have to be, especially with as elusive as they obviously seem to be and intelligent. Mm-hmm. I can't even get the word intelligent out. How good a timing is that? They know how to handle themselves so well out there. Plus, absolutely. You know, maybe they were hanging back a little bit more, but then they heard you guys, you know, crunching up this dirt, you know, dirt roads are mm-hmm. really loud, and you had a truck and you were making plenty of racket and there's lights, and you know, maybe they're like, hey, let's see what's going on here. Did everybody see those the eyes shine basically at the same time, or did you have to point them out?
As soon as I saw it and I said, stop, look left, everyone saw it.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't like, no, look over there, no, down a little, up a little, left. No, it was like, I saw something, stop, it's left. Everyone's like, yep, there it is.
And were these pretty, and again, it was not the closest thing to you. Obviously, you said 60 to 70 yards away in the initial sighting. How big, it's really hard to say, but were, you know, did you get the impression that they were kind of wide set and large eyes for being at that distance?
Trying to think back, I do recall thinking that they were wide. And again, it's 70 yards, really hard to tell, but, you know, a deer at 70 yards, they're going to be almost on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, with illumination on them. But these were definitely separated. So at a guesstimated 70 separation between them, I would guess they were pretty wide. But, you know, I'm speculating because it was literally pitch black. It was, I don't recall a moon that night. It was a very, very dark night, and we were fairly deep in the canyon. So there was not a lot of light. I would say that almost no light pollution, as much as you can get.
I mean, you go 10 feet high, you know, with the wide set eyes, you can imagine the size of the noggin on that thing.
Precisely.
If we're assuming Sasquatch.
When I saw the, whatever they were, rise up, my first thought was a cougar didn't just climb a tree because that would have looked bounding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would have bounded up the tree. I rose, and that's the best way I can, the best word I can use is it just went from 5 feet to 10 feet in one fluid, non-bounding motion.
What did Nate say in that moment? Did anybody, you know, use a colorful four-letter word or anything? I mean,
I'm pretty sure both of us did. I, you know, just kind of a, oh, you know,
yeah,
moment. I don't remember the specifics of the vocals we made.
Yeah. Because that's got to be a shocker. I mean, you're thinking, well, it's just kind of different. Something 5 feet up in the air could be whatever. But then you go, oh.
Yeah, we saw something strange, and I do remember we looked at each other, and I'm sure my eyes were as big around as his, and his were the size of saucers.
Yeah.
So,
and then to lose track. Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
that was the part I was like, uh-oh, lost track of one of them at some point, which is interesting because you hear a lot about how silent they can be when they want to be and how quickly they can move.
And that was another part that was very interesting to me was, Not a sound out of anything. Even when whatever it was stood up, you know, and it was a pretty heavily forested area. Even standing up, making that much movement upwards, it should have bumped branches. There should have been noise, but nothing. Not a branch crackling. Not the dirt movement. No rocks. Nothing. It was silent.
I will say they know how to bide their time, and in some encounters, they're completely silent, and you can almost goad them, which, you know, you weren't goading them, but I know what you were trying to do, and I would have probably done the exact same thing. You tap the, you know, the tree, and then you try to toss something just to get any kind of a sound to try to mark what this is. And then other encounters, they're hitting people with infrasound and running around and screaming, and people are like, where's my brown pants, you know?
Exactly.
Which they just stood there and watched you. And you never saw one blink, right? There was no blinking.
No, there was no blinking. These things were fixated as probably as much as we were. And that's why I just kind of got the sense of curiosity. Again, the whole time, I didn't feel fear until my daughter... Till I heard that tone in her voice. And then I thought, where the heck is that other one? And my daughter's scared of something, so we're moving. So,
well, if you don't know what it is, regardless, once you lose track of something that large, that you're assuming is that large, I mean, from what we're hearing, it's time to at least get in the truck, right?
Yeah.
I bet finding that footprint, though, was kind of like, holy smokes.
Yeah, that made my day. I mean, me and Trish were just giddy when we saw that, and we rushed right to Nate's work and showed him. His eyes went as big as saucers. He's a very he's a very demonstrative young man. He's a lot of fun. But yeah, his eyes went as big as saucers. He's like, "Oh my gosh, you guys, that's what we saw." And he was very excited. And yeah, as were we when we found it. And what was really neat about the experience for me and Trish is while we were on the backside of that hill, it kind of goes over the hill and down into a ravine of sorts where there's a nice little stream running through. And so, you know, there's water in the area. There's obviously wildlife. It, you know, any you could live out there if you needed to. And I couldn't quite make it all the way down to the ravine where the little stream was running through. But while we were back on the side of that, a group of deer came through and walked within about 15 feet of Trish. Two of them did. Three of them walked within about 30 feet of me. And it was really, really neat. I mean, just to be that close to these, I could see them a million times and I don't care. I'm in awe of nature. I love it. And just to see these magnificent animals just acting like we weren't even there.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It would be, can you imagine going back up the road and telling the campers, hey, you may want to know that there's possibly an 800-pound, you know, five set of gorillas out here, not far from where you're sleeping right now. Y'all look like little burritos.
When we were going out and the metal detector started going off, we'd gone quite a ways down the road, but we'd pulled over and there was a camper. And it looked like someone who had actually set up camp there for the summer or even longer. I don't know. He may stay out there. But we're being pretty raucous. There's a lot of noise coming from the truck while Nate's trying to turn this thing off. It's already off and it's screaming. And the guy comes out of his camper and says, "Hey, you know, what's going on out here? You know, don't mess with my stuff." And he says, "Hey, you know, we're not messing with your stuff." I went over and talked to him. I says, "We just, you know, we're having a malfunctioning metal detector. We'll be on our way shortly." The next day, as Trish and I were leaving, I stopped and talked to him, and I explained to him, you know, we were the ones last night. We weren't messing with your stuff. I says, but we did, you know, we were up in here looking around, and we saw some really strange eyes up over the hill behind you. And he just kind of said, "Yeah, a lot of people see those things up here." And he didn't name them. He didn't, you know, identify them. He just says, "Yeah, a lot of people see those things up here."
Oh, well, there you go. So whatever those things exactly are, we don't know. Mm-hmm. So even so you described the blue illuminated eyes and everything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't bat an eyelash. He's like, "Oh, yeah, people see those things all the time up here."
Oh, just... so matter of fact,
oh my
like,
gosh,
it was me telling him it was Saturday. Yeah, of course it's Saturday.
Wow.
So it was kind of neat. And since then, I've been up that canyon several times. I've talked to police officers who have stopped to ask me what the hell I'm doing, you know, tromping around in the snow. And I'm that guy. When I go into the National Forest, you know, you have to stop at the little toll and talk to the guy and give him the money. I'm always stop and I say, "Where's all the Sasquatch sightings?" And, you know, 99 out of 100 times I just get laughed at, which I'm fine with. Judge me how you want. But every once in a while, I'll get a park ranger that'll be like, "Oh, we've had a few sightings up this fork or down this canyon or whatever."
It's always nice to get that 1%, you know? You got to go fishing or you'll never catch any fish.
If you don't swing the bat, you'll always strike out.
That's right. So. Now, you mentioned you had two possible Sasquatch encounters. Where was the other one?
So the other one was up a canyon that would have been just north of that one. It's called Hobble Creek Canyon in Springville, Utah. And this one was just audible. We had driven, and this one was just Nate and Trish and myself. Sophia wasn't with us. And we had driven, way up to the very tip top of Hobble Creek Canyon. We were, about ready to drop down into the next county over on the east side of the canyon. We just caught some strange screaming noises, is the best I could describe, and just maybe howls even. So, you know, we screamed back, and then we heard a commotion. I don't know how to explain it. Not near to us. Whatever it was significantly distant from us. But it was a commotion of of the forest, the woods, and then a scream and what sounded like another animal dying. I don't know what that was. For all I know, that could have been some coyotes killing a deer. But it was interesting. It was strange. It was, again, I grew up in these mountains, and I've heard of a lot of things, and this, I had never heard it happen. Like, I'd never heard that before.
A scream, I mean, like, can you liken it to anything? Like, if it was going to be categorized as a Bigfoot scream, would it be like the Puyallup screamer or the, you know, Ohio howl? Like, was it a scream or a howl, or what exactly was it?
I would describe it more of a wail. Very high-pitched and very powerful. Long-winded. To compare it to the two, probably more like the Puyallup screamer. And again, this is around the same time. So, you know, this is a year and a half ago I'm trying to draw back on, because to me, this one wasn't as significant because for first I didn't see anything. It wasn't close to us, but it could have been two elk fighting. But I mean, no, it didn't sound like an elk. I mean, I've heard an elk bugle 100 times. It sounded more like the Puyallup screamer.
That's what's interesting about places like that, is that depending on where you're located and where it's located or they're located, the acoustics of certain places are incredible. So, you know, it can be tricky, right? Because it does sound powerful. And of course, something, let's go off your friend there, your 10-foot-tall friend. He would have a massive set of lungs and he could probably make some ruckus. But who knows, really, right? And now that commotion, Casey, what do you mean by commotion?
Just trees being disturbed significantly. I mean, I wouldn't call them being knocked over, but hit. Not like the stick on the bark sound, you know, not like just slapped, but like hit, like powerful. Like, I mean, think of a huge bodybuilder or boxer hitting the heavy bag, you know, just big thump hits, with branches rustling and that type of stuff. But again, the howl was very far away. So as far as the rustling of the forest, the two don't really match, because something was close enough for me to hear it moving. But whatever was screaming was very distant of it. So, I mean, I could put 100 stories to it, you know, speculating.
Right.
An animal running from something else, or, you know, whatever it may be. But that's just the way that it was experienced, was a loud howl. Well, I prefer wail, a commotion, and then the screaming again, and then what sounded like an animal being killed. It sounded violent.
Do you guys go back up to that Payson Canyon area, that specific area, you know, when you can get out there, especially if weather permits, actually seeing something like that?
Oh yeah, all the time. I've probably been up there 2,000 times since then.
Any more sign of them?
Nothing. Not a thing. I've gone up there a lot since then, as well as, I mean, where I live, I've got my choice of 20 canyons within 20 minutes. So, you know, I'm always all over these hills, just, you know, because you can't outguess the strange. It's going to happen where it happens, when it happens, whether you're there or not. So I try to spread myself as thin as possible and be as in many places as I can.
See, and I think that's how the Bigfoot think, because once you get up into northern Utah, they can go north, they can go west, and they can go east, and they have nothing but coverage for as long as they want to go, they can go, which of course makes the most sense that they would migrate. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, you remember the video, I think it was last year, that it came out of the Sasquatch that was on the side of the hill in Provo, filmed literally from like the road.
It was during the day, right?
Yeah, it was during the day. It was up on the hill, and he's going, oh my gosh, I think that's a Sasquatch.
I think, yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I'll put that in the show notes, everybody.
And I've driven up to there. I can see it from my front doorstep, that hill. It's very interesting because there's this great big face of a mountain that we get to look at, and I promise you, 90% of the population here along the Wasatch Front takes it for granted. You know, we have this huge painting of mountain, you know, this big Bob Ross painting that we get to live in front of, and we never look at it. And if you do spend some time looking at it, sometimes you get to see some cool stuff.
So if you know that hill and you've seen the video, you have a better mind as far as the size of that thing. So to you, is that a Sasquatch in that video?
Yes, that thing was enormous.
Because it can be hard if you haven't been to a place. You know, you don't have any reference for anything. So that's cool. So you like that video.
I love that video. When I saw that, and they actually played it on our local news, and I'm like, no way, I know where that hill is. So the next day I drove to the foot of that hill. And I mean, the foot of that hill is somebody's front yard. And I'm parked out in front of these people's house, and I'm looking up this hill, you know, looking for a way I can go around and get to the back to where I can go hike up the hill. And with my condition, there's no way I could hike that hill. It's too steep. It's too rugged. In fact, the guys later on YouTube posted a video of one of them hiking the hill, and it is actually quite treacherous. And whatever it was up there, it was moving around with quite a bit of ease. So, yeah, that one, in my opinion, that one was a legitimate. That was a good one.
It reminds me slightly of the Memorial Day footage that's very famous. Now, that one, the Memorial Day footage, it was booking it on the hill, which, of course, I think they had like an Olympic sprinter on that hill, and he couldn't match the speed of it. But that video slightly reminds me of that. But again, I'll put, I'll put all these ones that I met, because a lot of times people go, well, you mentioned that, and then where do I find that? So I will try to locate all of those, you guys, and put that in show notes. Well, Casey, I know that we are not done chatting, because now we get to go to the Uinta Basin and we get to talk Skinwalker Ranch.
Yes, my favorite place on the planet.
Yes. And you have had, so, and just to preface this, because I've had John Olson on, I've had Skinwalker Ranch talks, but the cool thing is you have actually had some experiences in and around these places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little fire. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. And consulting our memories. And then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.